You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia ora, Cameron. Let's begin firstly with an update on the situation in Ukraine.
Kia ora, yeah. So 600,000 refugees have fled Ukraine over the past 2 weeks. This brings the total now up to 5.6 million, according to UNHCRW. Today, some 120 civilians trapped in Mariupol's Azovstal steel plant have been able to leave, arriving in the Ukrainian city of Zaporizhia. This is the first time civilians have been able to be evacuated from the plant after negotiations from the Red Cross and the UN, although it's estimated that potentially hundreds more are trapped in a bunker network underneath the plant, as well as remaining fighters. The UN head, Guterres, met last week with both Putin in Moscow and Zelensky in Kyiv, and he also said the war is evil after visiting Bucha and other Kyiv suburbs. Russia last week also cut off gas exports to Poland and Bulgaria on Friday after refusing to pay in rubles. This gave a bit of a shock to other countries which are reliant on Russian energy, with some energy suppliers looking at how to avoid current sanctions and pay Russia, although I don't think anything further has happened yet. There's been Russian missile strikes in the western part of Ukraine, which have increased, including railway stations and other infrastructure. Yesterday, in the port city of Odessa, a teenager was killed, and there were also other missile strikes on the airport runway. US officials are claiming that Russia wanted to annex the southern city of Kherson, which is close to Crimea. This is a city which Russia took early on in the war. It's been reported that they want to hold mock referendums on joining Russia. And over the weekend, Russian forces are starting to force shops to use the Russian ruble. The war in the east continues to grind on slowly. And while UK and US intelligence officials do report of slow Russian progress, they are still taking smaller villages. On Saturday, there was a Ukrainian artillery strike on a Russian command center in the east, which killed 7 Russian officers. And the Russian general leading the war, Valery Gerasimov, had reportedly visited the site just before, but left before the shelling. And all eyes are on Russia's May 9th Victory Day parade, which will happen next Monday. This commemorates Russia's victory in World War II. And is seen as a bit of a kind of grandstanding opportunity for Putin. There's rumours from US and UK officials that Putin may announce a general mobilisation, although this is just speculation for now.
And following that, can you give me some detail on Nancy Pelosi's recent visit to Ukraine?
Zelensky has been very busy hosting various diplomats. So over the weekend, US House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited along with other House Democrats. On Thursday, the US House passed a World War II era land lease act, and this allows the US to lend or lease military equipment to Ukraine and other Eastern European allies. Biden on Thursday also proposed to Congress another $33 billion funding package for Ukraine over the coming months, which also includes $20 billion in military and security assistance. And the week before, Secretary of State and Defense Secretary also visited Zelensky, with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin saying that he wants to see Russia weakened. So this kind of shows a bit of an escalation in the war effort from the Americans, as well as efforts to shore up support with European military allies. They held a summit last Tuesday at an American base in Germany, where Germany committed to sending anti-air vehicles to help Ukraine. And the US and UK are also training troops on the various weapon systems they're giving the Ukraine army, like artillery and vehicles in their own military bases. So yeah, as the war grinds on in the east, there's a lot more of a focus of artillery and the ability to counterattack, which is why the West has been giving Ukraine a lot more kind of offensive and artillery equipment.
Can we talk now a little about the small breakaway region of Transnistria, which has been in the news headlines of late? Can you explain a little where that sits in the conflict and why it's important to Russia?
Yeah, so it's been around for a while, but a couple of weeks ago, Russian General Rustam Minakiev said that he wants to link Russia with Transnistria via southern Ukraine. So this is a tiny little Soviet breakaway republic which sits between Moldova and western Ukraine. Transnistria is along the Dniester River. So when when the Soviet Union collapsed, basically most of Moldova's culturally Romanian, but part of Tiraspol, this big city, they wanted to stay Russian. So in 1992, there was a war which fought to kind of secede and stay independent, where over 1,000 people died. And ever since then, it's been kind of a frozen conflict with Russian peacekeepers stationed in the middle. It's quite small. Like, Moldova's a very poor country. It's only got about 2.5 million people, and Transnistria only has 500,000. If there was to be a war, you wouldn't see the same kind of military strength you're seeing now in Ukraine. I mean, Moldova only has an army of 3,000. Moldova is also currently run by Maia Sandu, who's a pro-European. So, over the past couple of weeks, there's been a series of attacks. So a radio tower was bombed and also a security building was hit by a rocket attack. But they're unsure whether it's a false flag or not. It would be quite significant if it were to happen. I don't think it would. I visited before in 2017, and it's really weird. Like, Transnistria is a very interesting place. They've still got the hammer and sickle and stuff like that, and a lot of army stuff. But they have a lot more cultural. They have a lot more economic ties with Europe. So in 2014, Moldova signed a free trade deal with the EU, and that means that Transnistria actually exports 70% of the exports that go to Europe. So Transnistria are funded by Russia. They get free Russian gas, and you go around and there's like Putin flags and Russian flags and stuff. But I think it's probably being over optimism from Russia to think that they would to try and invade and launch a war from Transnistria into the rest of Ukraine.
A few weeks ago, we spoke about the French election, which Macron has now won. And this week saw May Day in France. We've heard reports of a bit of violence in Paris during the May Day protests. Can you explain maybe what May Day is for listeners who perhaps don't know, and then why some of those protests turned violent?
Yeah, so May Day is International Workers' Day, so celebrations and protests occur all around Europe, normally, every May Day. So this year in Paris, following the election of Emmanuel Macron, there were various student and labour union demonstrations calling for higher wages, support for public services, and also against the retirement age raising from 62 to 65. In Paris, there were an estimated 25 to 50,000. And this is because even though the presidential election just happened, also there's parliamentary elections in France in June. The violence, it's really just a small thing, to be honest. Like, I've been to the Berlin one a couple of times, and this year in Berlin it was noted for its lack of violence, although an egg was thrown at the Berlin mayor. I think the violence is a lot kind of smaller cases, and it's just small pockets. But on the whole, most of these demonstrations are quite, friendly and peaceful. In Berlin, there was a lot of demonstrations and a critical mass demo, and in Rome there were also several concerts and demonstrations as well.
I saw some tomatoes being thrown at Macron as well.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that. But anyway, in the light of May Day, it's kind of topical to talk a little about everyday life in Europe more generally at the moment, which we haven't touched on for a while. I know cost of living is pretty high here in Aotearoa. What's it looking like over there for you guys?
Yeah, it's also not good. So preliminary numbers out of the EU last week said that inflation was at 7.5% in April. And in the Baltic states, this was in the teens. There's also been a lot of slow economic growth in the EU countries. So this year, I mean, just like everywhere, it's kind of not good. Energy costs are up 40% this year, and food prices apparently are up 5% each month. And sunflower oil as well has also doubled since the war in Ukraine. So you definitely notice when you're out shopping, just the crazy rise in food prices. Even the kebab manufacturers association in Berlin were lamenting having to raise the price. And in the UK, it's also seen similar increases. And Boris Johnson has also come under fire because he's not raising the state pension and other benefits in line with inflation. So the European Central Bank will probably raise interest rates, but I don't know what else they can do to try and stop it.
And to finish off this week, let's dip into the world of science. Can you tell me about the revamp of the Large Hadron Collider?
Yeah, so this is so cool. The Large Hadron Collider is basically a big tunnel, 27 kilometers long under the Swiss-French border, and it's run by just outside of Geneva, and it's run by CERN. So it will reopen again after 3 years of maintenance and upgrade work. So basically what they do is they get particles to go around this loop super, super fast and then smash them together, and they're looking for new unknown particles. Apparently the collision won't happen for another couple months, so we won't kind of see anything until then, but it's really, really cool, super interesting.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.